Greetings and welcome to Trottle Up. This is a radio show and podcast that showcases critical thinking and complex problem solving. And it is designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. Now, all aboard the Trottle Up Express, powered by High Velocity Reason, and I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith, U.S. Navy retired. Now, I'm a naval aviator and former squadron commander and Top Gun instructor as a naval aviator. And also, I'm a pioneer in the field of some aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving, and of course, high velocity reason. Now, our tagline for the show is to accelerate beyond the ordinary. So we could say that we are not ordinary thinkers, you and I, but we are different and we are out of the box thinkers. Our motto for the show is to employ high velocity reason to achieve high octane performance. And in a nutshell, that basically means to stay out ahead of the problem. That's particularly important if we want to achieve success. Now, our mission statement for the show, and this changes a little bit from time to time, but this is a pretty good mission statement, is to provide our listening audience with a relatively easy yet effective way to strengthen our power of reason through the employment of critical thinking. Now, our website, the address here is throttleupradio.com. That's throttleupradio.com. That's the address for the website. And before we close on our introduction, I wanted to say that our audio engineering services is provided by Evergroove Studios, and they are located in Evergreen, Colorado, which is right outside of Denver on the west side. Highly recommend their services for anyone who wants to get involved with audio. It could be any kind of audio that you might have in mind, including music, by the way. Also, graphics artist services and media support is provided by Reflections Printing, and the gal is Jennifer. She heads up this organization, and she owns it as well. And Jennifer does a great job with all of our media support, is a fantastic graphics artist and media production specialist, and her phone number is 435-574-0422. That's 435-574-0422. And before we close the introduction, I want to say that the show is typically organized into three parts. So part one of Throttle Up is critical thinking, or an ongoing discussion of various aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving. Part two is our storyboard, and the storyboard is a story of America, or a story of Americans, story of an individual. It could be any kind of story, but it all relates to trying to get our arms around this whole thing, which we call critical thinking and complex problem solving. And then part three is our radio essay. Now, our radio essay is typically a little bit more in-depth treatment of a particular subject. We do not intend for this to be boring. But for those who would like a little bit more info on certain things that we cover in part one and part two, then part three typically is a way for us to get a little bit further into a subject matter and understand it better. Okay, all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is a place where all critical thinkers and complex problem solvers are welcome with open arms. Okay, welcome back to part one of Throttle Up for this week. And now, typically we have three parts, although we do run special editions every now and then. We just completed a four series on innovation in America. Innovation is now a national agenda item, thanks to Newt Gingrich and others. And so we spent quite a bit of time on it, and we'll continue. There is actually more to talk about in terms of innovation. But we wrap it around a couple of other, well, I guess you would say a couple of other things, a couple of other aspects of it. And so critical thinking, complex problem solving, and innovation all go together. And we are trying to, we will succeed in trying to pull all these three items together into some kind of a holistic picture or some kind of a big picture. What exactly is it, and how should we think about critical thinking, complex problem solving, and innovation? Now, central to our argument on this show and what we've been trying to do for some time and what we'll continue to do is complex problem solving is the centerpiece of what we are all about. And so from that centerpiece or from that hub, we can spoke out to various related areas or related concerns. Critical thinking, of course, innovation and creativity. That's also a major part of the wheel. And other things, too, which we will cover. And one of them, another part of the wheel is imagination. That's really a big thing. It's kind of like undertreated, if that's a word. not treated very well, because it's a little bit hard to get a hold of. But anyway, we'll try to do that, because we do things here that typically are outside the box. We are innovative thinkers, hopefully. We try to be anyway. And so for part one of this show, which deals with a continuing discussion of critical thinking, I'm going to introduce a couple of new things that are, I think, timely of what's going on socio-political in the country. And the thing I want to talk about this week is a way of introducing this this material, which we will cover for a number of shows. And it's an area that I call mind space. Or another way of saying that is, what occupies your mind space? Now, a mind space is a frame of reference that you possess. And we all possess certain frames of reference. And what is that? It is a starting point. For us, we have to start somewhere. We are not just, we should not be in this chaotic soup of ideas and concepts and beliefs. We have to have some kind of a way to at least start off with our ability to think, our ability to comprehend, and our ability to do things. So, what occupies our mind space, or what occupies your mind space? Now, the reason why this is so important is because as we take a look at what's going on in the socio-political environment in this country and also other countries, perhaps we could say even around the world, what is going on there and why is it that we're dealing with these issues and why are we still having this ongoing endless debate about the pros and cons of socialism, the pros and cons of capitalism, the pros and cons of whatever ism is front and center on the table with us. And so I thought it would be helpful if all of us could sort of like step back and ask ourselves, what do we need to understand about this situation? We keep getting bombarded by an endless stream of accusations, endless stream of propositions, endless stream of assertions. And what do we really need to understand? And so I thought, you know, and I'm in the same boat. So I thought about, well, let's see if we can understand what is our frame of reference or what occupies our mind space. And I would say that one of the biggest problems that we have when we are dealing with our fellow citizens is that they might very well be occupying a completely different mind space than we are. And so I think it would be helpful if we understood where they're coming from, understood their belief and value system better. I'm not saying at all that we should accept it. Absolutely not. We accept things based upon the principles of critical thinking. And that is a belief that has long-term benefits and will survive any kind of popular social movement of the day. Now, having said that, it is also useful and I think appropriate to understand that a lot of what America is, or let's put it this way, I could call it, or we should call it, the founding principles of America. A lot of what went into that was a very thorough and comprehensive examination of history and of various socioeconomic systems all throughout human history and what seemed to work and what didn't work. And so the American founding principles, I think, are a good place for us to consider and to understand why they are there, why they have been put in place in a operative socioeconomic system. These are not just theoretical ideas. They were placed into a practical construct or framework, and they were implemented. And the implementation of it had been going on, or the results of the implementation has been going on for some time now, for over 200 years. And look at it now. What is it producing? And that's all part of the understanding. It's all part of things that should occupy our mind space. All right, so let's begin this discussion. And I think a really good place to start here is something that Donald Rumsfeld talked about and is in his latest book. But he has talked about this for some time. And I call it the four no's, if you will. What the first one is, what do you know? All right. The second one is, what do you not know? The third one is, what do you know that you don't know? And the fourth one, and this is a real tricky one. So let me say if, see if I can say it properly. What do you not know that you don't know? Or another way of saying that is do I have any knowledge deficits as I approach a particular area or arena? What are my knowledge deficits? In other words, am I operating from a position of having a knowledge deficit with respect to this particular situation or environment? Okay, so that's a good starting point for understanding what occupies your mind space. And so we can see that we can draw two boxes, what we do know now and what we should know about any given situation. Now, do those two boxes there superimpose themselves, or is there are they displaced? Okay. And typically, we're going to see that in most cases, those two boxes of what we actually know and what we should know are, in fact, displaced by a certain amount. Sometimes, in some cases, they are completely separate. Well, what we know and what we should know are completely separate entities. All right. So, what occupies our mind space, or what occupies your mind space? Belief and value system. All right. So the central point or the centerpiece of our mind space is typically, or it ought to be, our belief and value system, which contains a number of items. And I'll just list a few to get the thought process going. Virtue, compassion, generosity, they are all part of the belief system. Or I'm sorry, the value system. The belief system could be things like liberty, things like opportunities, things like performance, resources, and so forth. All right. Now, based upon that, can we construct some kind of model of reality based upon some of the things or many of the things that occupy our mind space? Now, here's the thing. Now, these things that occupy our mind space are not randomly organized. They are somehow connected to one another. And what is that connection? Or another way of saying that is, what is the network? And based upon that, can we understand at least partially, hopefully more than that, but can we understand our model of reality? Or better yet, what is the model of reality of the person that I am engaged with or talking to, particularly if they have a different set of ideas, if they have a different set of opinions, if they have a different set of propositions, and so forth and so on. So if in fact this consciousness that I have encountered, are they coming from a different place than the place that I occupy? Often I have found in my, you know, in the work that I do and the way I engage with people, particularly when I was doing my national book tour, I've got a number of books in national distribution, and I was on a book tour for some time, and I would encounter you know, all kinds of people at these bookstores, all right? And they would come in and they would see me at the entrance of the bookstore, and I would be promoting my books, but I would also be ready, willing, and able to engage with them in a conversation. And as I did so, and I did this many, many times, and it was really quite enjoyable. I learned a lot from talking to the folks that would just randomly come through the door. I realized that there has to be some common ground for us to begin to have a meaningful conversation. And what is that common ground? And so that's where I began my discussions with these complete strangers, is to try to establish some kind of a common ground and then begin to understand their mind space and what occupies their mind space and what is this model of reality that occupies their mind space. Now, right now, what's going on in the social political arena right now is a rather forceful discussion about the pros and cons of socialism. So there's a number of political operatives, political candidates. There's also media outlets that are promoting the idea of the virtues of socialism. Okay, so that's a good starting point for us to understand what is the mind space of those who believe in the virtues of socialism. Or, now there's a couple of other terms that floats around, and this is one of the things where I have a lot of problems with, is that we're not really precise about the terms that we use, particularly those political operatives out there. They use all kinds of terms that try to deflect meanings and try to confuse. So we ought to all agree as a society, as a culture, as Americans, we ought to all agree that we are going to use certain terms in meaningful discussions, and those certain terms have clear definitions. They're not wishy-washy definitions, but they're clear and as precise as we could possibly make them. And so that would be, I guess, a good starting point, is to define your terms and define them as clear and as unambiguous and as objective as possible. Okay, so the model of reality that we are dealing with, or what we could also say, is what exactly is occupying your mind space with respect to socio-political conditions in a culture or a society? What occupies your mind space? If what occupies your mind space, now we can think of this as left and right, or left leaning politically and right leaning politically. We could say that if what occupies your mind space is things dealing with collectivism, that is good to know. If what occupies your mind space, those things that deal with individualism, that is also good to know. If, in fact, what occupies your mind space is collectivism, is there any common ground that can be identified that also moves over into the realm of individualism and individual liberty? If there isn't any, then it becomes pointless to have a discussion in any meaningful way with people like that. And so that's a really good starting point. Now, under individualism, I wanted to add a couple of other things. Individualism it also includes the privatization of resources, whereas collectivism includes the collectivization of resources or the public ownership of resources. And so either you have private or public aspects of the world. What should go into the public arena and what should go into the private arena? Under collectivism, there's not much that ought to go into the private arena. Most things ought to be collectivized, and groups should be identified, and group superiority or group power should be the controlling doctrine. Under individualism, privatization of resources is the objective. Individual liberty, individual sovereignty, not group power, but individual sovereignty. And last but not least is objectivism. If the individual can be considered to be sovereign, important, and essential to the viability of a culture, then objectively, how is that a proposition supported? And that is, if you are a proponent of individualism like I am, then you have to be prepared to defend that whole concept from an objective standpoint, not from a political standpoint. Certainly you can do it politically, but ultimately you're going to have to rely on some kind of objective foundation for your belief system. Now, I would point out as we close this discussion here that on the left side, under collectivism, the current doctrine can be expressed within the constructs of the term neo-Marxism. Now, neo-Marxism does not believe in individualism, believes in group power and group think. And so what is the objective basis of such a belief system is a great question. And those who support that belief system should be prepared to defend it on objective grounds. All right, so that completes the discussion of the mind space, and we'll continue this discussion as we on future shows, as we move along in this series of shows that we call Throttle Up. Throttle Up, of course, is all about critical thinking and complex problem solving. And as a reminder, critical thinking and complex problem solving are the number one in-demand skills now in the global job market. And that's according to the Future of Jobs report recently published by the World Economic Forum. All right, so let us press on to part two. Welcome back to part two of Throttle Up for this week. Part two is our storyboard, and our story of this week is actually a full disclosure here. It's actually a continuing discussion of innovation in America. And the reason for that is because it really makes a great story. And I've got a couple of really fascinating stories to tell about this whole subject of innovation. As you know, we've been actually discussing this for some time. even before it was announced that this was a national agenda item. And it should be. Innovation or innovation in America should be on the forefront of our minds, because that is the fuel of our economic engine. The fuel of our economic engine is innovation and creativity, or another way of saying that is new ideas in the marketplace of ideas. We need a continuous stream of new ideas to refresh our consciousness. All right. 8 Essentials of Innovation. This was published by McKinsey & Company. We began to talk about this on the last couple of shows, and I'm going to sort of like dive in here because it is particularly important as we discuss this, because there's some really interesting things that have to be said about innovation and creativity in America. All right, so there is a number of 8. There are 8 items that McKinsey & Company talks about with respect to innovation, how they support the innovative process, or how do they support the process of discovery. So innovation comes from something. It just doesn't spontaneously emerge in the thought sphere. It comes from some place, and it emerges through some kind of a process. At least that's what a lot of people now are claiming. It's innovation is not spontaneous, but it is the result of following a process of discovery. The 8 items that are listed here by McKinsey & Company is aspire, choose, discover, evolve, accelerate, scale, extend, and mobilize. So let's go ahead and talk about them in a little bit more meaningful way. Now, I know some of this stuff is going to be a little dry, perhaps even somewhat overly technical. I will try not to make it overly technical and just to keep it completely understandable and hopefully make it enjoyable as we move through this process. And we talked about this on the last show, but let me just briefly talk about it. Aspire is basically a vision, all right? And a vision needs to be clarified. So we need the first thing is that we as innovators, let's say, all right, so we are now in this group that we call innovators. The first thing that we need to understand is we need to have a vision. We need to be able to look into the future, to imagine something there that doesn't exist here. And that's where imagination comes in, and that is that's a powerful cognitive process, is imagination, more powerful than you can possibly imagine. Sorry about that. I just realized that I'm using those two words together. Anyway, imagination and imagine. That just kind of came out. That's what happens. Anyway, aspire is to create a vision. And whenever we're doing something purposefully, all right, purpose, what is the purpose? What are we trying to achieve? We're doing something in our lives, we're doing something in our organizations, whatever. What is the purpose, and what is the vision that we have? And so write your vision statement, all right? The vision statement that I have used in some of the work that I have done is when we were trying to redesign airline pilot training for all U.S. carriers, in the United States, my vision was very, very simple, and it basically captured in one phrase. And the vision for this new training program was mission, realistic training, and evaluation. That was the vision. Mission, realism. It had to be real world inspired. Real world inspired training and evaluation. And of course, certification. So, the first thing is to create a vision. Now, I would caution those of us in business. I would caution about a couple of things. Often you see a vision statement or a mission statement that has to do with some kind of a profit or revenue generation or stuff like that. I would caution against that. I think when we're beginning our innovative process, we need not, because we don't want to limit ourselves. We actually don't know. When we begin the innovative process, we don't know if we are going to achieve a major breakthrough in something. If we do achieve a major breakthrough in something, then that is well and good. But we actually don't know that. So to start off with some kind of a economic perspective, I would say is not a really good way to go. We need to think in other terms, at least initially. Okay, so Aspire is the beginning process by which we create this process or proceed through this process of discovery. Aspire. The second item is to choose. It says here, and I'm reading from this McKinsey article, fresh creative insights are invaluable, but in our experience, many companies run into difficulty less from a scarcity of new ideas than from the struggle to determine which ideas to support and scale. At bigger companies, this can be particularly problematic during market discontinuities when supporting the next wave of growth may seem too risky, or at least until competitive dynamics force painful changes. Innovation, it says, is inherently risky, to be sure, and getting the most from a portfolio of innovative ideas is more about managing risk than eliminating it, since no one knows exactly where valuable innovations will emerge, and searching everywhere is impractical. Executives must create some boundary conditions for the opportunity space they want to explore. Now, we talked about that in the previous section. We talked about the mind space. We talked about, in this particular situation here, we're talking about the problem space. The process of identifying and bounding these spaces can run the gamut from intuitive vision of the future to carefully scrutinized strategic analysis. Thoughtfully prioritizing these spaces also allows companies to assess whether they have enough investment behind their most valuable opportunities. Okay, the next item on our list is discover. All right, now remember that really innovation is the results of a process of discovery. We're discovering or attempting to discover something new and something that is potentially valuable. So new and valuable. Discover. So this article goes on to talk about discover. Innovation also requires actionable and differentiated insights, the kind that excites customers and brings new categories and markets into being. All right, that is really, that's crucial. How do companies develop them? Genius is always an appealing approach if you can get it. Fortunately, innovation yields to other approaches besides exceptional creativity. The rest of us can look for insights by methodically and systematically scrutinizing three areas. One, a valuable problem to solve. Two, a technology that enables a solution. I would rephrase that a bit because there are some examples which I have already talked about. I would call it a mechanism that enables a solution. I think that's a better term. And then three, a business model that generates money from it. You can argue that nearly every successful innovation occurs at the intersection of these three elements. Companies, I'm continuing here reading this article, companies that effectively collect, synthesize, and collide them stand the highest probability of success. All right, so let me restate those for clarity and convenience. The first one is a valuable problem to solve. Two, a mechanism that enables a solution. And three, a business model that generates money from it. I'll continue reading. If you get the sweet spot of what the customer is struggling with, and at the same time, get a deeper knowledge of the new mechanisms coming along and find a mechanism for how these two things can come together, then you're going to get good returns. Continuing with this, the insight discovery process, which extends beyond a company's boundaries to include insight generating partnerships, is the lifeblood of innovation. We won't belabor the matter here, though, because it's already the subject of countless articles and books. They go on to say that one thing we can add is that discovery is iterative, and the active use of prototypes can help companies continue to learn as they develop, test, validate, and refine their innovations. They say that, moreover, we firmly believe that without the fully developed innovation system encompassing the other elements described in this article, large organizations probably won't innovate successfully, no matter how effective their insight generation process is. And so we have to have some mechanism in place by which innovation occurs. That's my statement here as we continue with this article. Now we're going to take a short break and we will be right back. Hey, welcome back, and we're continuing our discussion here of innovation. And the third item, well, let's see, I'm sorry, the next item on our list, it is This is the fifth item. Accelerate is the next item on our list. This is the innovation protocol that we talked about. And like I said, it's accelerate. And particularly important, this is not often thought of, but this is a really good idea presented by McKinsey and Company. And I'm continuing to read this rather fascinating article. They talked about accelerate. He goes on to say that virulent antibodies undermine innovation at many large companies. Cautious governance processes make it easy for stifling bureaucracies in marketing, legal, IT, and other functions to find reasons to halt or slow approvals. Too often, companies simply get in the way of their own attempts to innovate. A surprising number of impressive innovations from companies were actually the fruit of their mavericks who succeeded in bypassing their early approval processes. Clearly, there's a balance to be maintained. Bureaucracy must be held in check, yet the rush to market should not undermine the cross-functional collaboration, continuous learning cycles, and clear decision pathways that help enable innovation. Okay, I want to underline something here. And this is something that I'm working on as we speak, and we'll be talking about it in future shows, and that is clear decision pathways to help enable innovation. In other words, complex problem solving. What is it? How do we do it? How can we do it effectively and efficiently to achieve mission success? That's something that I'm working on now to see if I can make sense out of it and define it in a way that it can be replicated and used across the board. So let me continue with, I'm sorry for diverging a little bit, but let me continue here with this article. And he talks about the balance to be maintained. Our managers with the right knowledge, skills, and experience making the crucial decisions in a timely manner so that innovation continually moves through an organization in a way that creates and maintains competitive advantage without exposing a company to unnecessary risks. Companies, they goes on to say, the companies also thrive by testing their promising ideas with customers early in the process before internal forces impose modifications that blur the original value proposition. To end up with the innovation initially envisioned, it's necessary to knock down the barriers that stand between a great idea and the end user. Companies need a well-connected manager to take charge of a project and be responsible for the budget, time to market, and key specifications. A person, in other words, who can say yes rather than no. In addition, the project team needs to be cross-functional in reality, not just on paper. This means locating its members in a single place and ensuring that they give the project a significant amount of their time to support a culture that puts the innovation project success above the success of each function. cross-functional collaboration can help ensure end user involvement throughout the development process. At many companies, marketing's role is to champion the interest of end users as development teams evolve products and to help ensure that the final result is what everyone first envisioned. Okay, that is some really great advice for all of us who are aspire to innovate, all of us that are involved in innovative products, all of us that are involved in complex problem solving, coming up with innovative ideas or innovative solutions to a complex problem. So that's particularly important. The next item on the list is scale, and that is some ideas such as luxury goods and many smartphone apps are destined for niche markets. Others, like social networks, work at a global scale. Explicitly considering the appropriate magnitude and reach of a given idea is important to ensure that the right resources and risks are involved in pursuing it. The seemingly safe or safer option of scaling up over time can be a death sentence. Resources and capabilities need to be marshaled to make sure a new product or service can be delivered quickly at the desired volume and quality. Manufacturing facilities, suppliers, distributors, and others must be prepared to execute a rapid and full rollout. For example, when TomTom launched its first touchscreen navigational device in 2004, the product flew off the shelves. By 2006, TomTom's line of portable navigation devices reached sales of about 5 million units a year, and by 2008, yearly volume had jumped to more than 12 million. That's faster market penetration than mobile phones, says TomTom's CEO. While TomTom's initial accomplishments lay in combining a well-defined consumer problem with a widely available technology component, rapid scaling was vital to the product's continued success. All right, we have two more that we will talk about, two more items as we conclude this discussion next week. But this is we are now at the end of our chat for this week, the end of another Throttle Up radio show. And before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here. And I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.